By the time the latest gift shows up on her desk, the whole floor is already watching. The bag is small, glossy, and expensive looking. The married boss stands over her chair with that easy, practiced smile that wins clients and senior executives. He tells her it is just a token of appreciation. Talia feels every eye on the back of her neck. She hears the fake coughs, the forced keyboard clatter, the quick puff of laughter from the cluster near the copy room. They all know this is not the first time. Coffee cards, perfume, a handbag she could not afford on her own salary. All from him. She forces herself to say thank you while her stomach twists. She does not want the gift, but she knows what happens to the people who embarrass a boss in public. Behind her, someone takes a quiet photo on a phone. The snap is soft. The damage is not. Chapter 1, The Gift Bag. The office air felt stale by late afternoon, heavy with recycled cold air and the smell of burned coffee from the break room. Screens glowed in rows across the open floor. Keyboards clicked, phones rang, and every so often a thin laugh rose and died again. It was the usual noise of a mid-sized company grinding through another weekday. Talia kept her eyes on her screen. She checked numbers, moved cells, wrote notes for a report the boss had said he needed by the end of the day. Her shoulders ached, her jaw hurt from clenching. She knew he was on his way over before she saw him. The sound around her seemed to dip, like the volume had been turned down. Marcus Reed walked between the cubicles with a small glossy bag in one hand. Gold tissue paper stuck out of the top. He was in his usual look. Pressed shirt, clean haircut, wedding ring that caught the light when he gestured in meetings. His charm came easy. He had a way of dropping a hand on a shoulder and making people feel like they mattered. Today, the hand landed on the edge of her desk. "Talia," he said, voice warm, "you have been carrying this team for months. Thought you deserved something a little extra." He set the bag in front of her keyboard. Conversations around them softened and blurred, but they did not stop. No one was actually working. She could feel that. Heads tilted just enough to see. People shifted in chairs and watched her from the corners of their eyes. Her throat went dry. "You did not have to," she said. She kept her tone light, tried to sound flattered, not trapped. "The report is not even finished yet." He chuckled. "It is not about the report. It is about all the late nights, the times you stepped up without being asked. Go on, open it." Her fingers shook as she pulled the tissue aside. Inside was a slim black box with a logo she recognized from luxury sites she could not afford. She slid it open and found a silver bracelet, thin and simple, with a tiny stone in the center. The kind of thing that looked modest until you saw the price tag. "Oh," she said. It was all she could manage. From behind, someone muttered low. Another person gave a fake cough that sounded like a laugh. The tension pressed on her back. Marcus watched her face. "You like it? It is beautiful," she said. Her voice came out smaller than she wanted. "Thank you." He smiled, satisfied. "You deserve to feel appreciated." He did not hand gifts to anyone else. Not that day, not that week. Not ever in front of her. The pattern had started months earlier with small things that were easier to brush off. Coffee cards with his signature on the envelope. A scented candle. A book he said reminded him of her drive. Each one arrived with a friendly line about hard work. Each one felt a little more personal. The first coffee card had been easy to ignore. She told herself it was just a random perk. The second and third were harder. Then came the perfume. A bottle that made her cheeks burn when she saw the name on the label. That one she left in the box at home, hidden under socks. Now the bracelet lay soft and bright against the black velvet. This was not something you picked up at a gas station on the way to work. This took thought, time, and serious money. "Talia gets the princess treatment again," a voice said from two desks back, too quiet for anyone outside their cluster to claim they heard it clearly. "Shut up," another whispered. "He is right there." A third voice, edged with resentment. "He can hear himself, too." She closed the box and set it gently beside her mouse. "Thank you, Mr. Reed," she repeated. She chose the formal title on purpose. A line, even if it was thin. He frowned a little at the change, then smoothed it over. "Come by my office before you head out. I want to talk about your role on the new client file." Her stomach dipped. "Sure." He moved away, greeting others as he passed, making a show of asking how their day was going. He did not hand out any other bags. he did not drop any other gifts on any other desk. As soon as he was at a safe distance, the whispering grew sharper. "That bracelet is not cheap," one coworker said, eyes on her screen while she talked. "Bet it matches the perfume he gave her," another answered. "He never even buys coffee for the rest of us," someone else added. "Not even the cheap stuff." Talia half turned in her chair. "You all done?" she asked, trying to keep her tone flat, not defensive. Silence for a moment. Jenna, who sat across the aisle, lifted her head. "I am just saying, people notice. This looks bad for you, girl. Real bad." "I did not ask for it," Talia said. "No one cares if you asked," Jenna said. "What they see is the married boss buying you presents. Over and over." The words landed heavy. Married boss, gifts, repeated, put together in a way that sickened her. She wanted to argue, but there was nothing to grab. The facts lined up too neatly. At lunch, she carried her food to the break room and felt the eyes again. Half smiles, half smirks. The friendly small talk felt strained. Someone asked her about the bracelet, joking, but the joke tasted sour. "You must have the magic touch," one man said as he stirred sugar into his coffee. "We cannot even get new chairs approved." "Maybe if you worked as hard as she does, you would get a bracelet too," Marcus said from the doorway. He had walked in without her noticing. Laughter scattered through the room. It did not sound kind. Marcus clapped the man on the shoulder and walked to the fridge like nothing was wrong. Talia stared at her plate and kept her hands under the table so no one could see them shake. Back at her desk, her closest friend at the office, a quiet analyst named Dion, rolled his chair closer. He kept his voice low. "You need to be careful," he said. "People are drawing their own maps." "You know this is not what it looks like," she said. He held her gaze. "I know you. I do not know him. And I know a married man who buys private gifts for one woman on his team is not thinking about your reputation first." She swallowed. "If I make a big deal, it will blow back on me. You know that." "Maybe," he said. "Maybe not. But right now it is already blowing back on you. Only difference is you get no control over it." The rest of the day dragged. Each time she glanced at the bracelet box, she felt a mix of anger and fear. She thought about sliding it back into the bag and leaving it on his chair with a note. But the picture of his face when he found it, the shape of his power in the office, stopped her. Near closing time, he appeared at her desk again. "My office," he said softly. "When you get a minute." She went in 10 minutes later. His coat hung on the rack. Family photos lined the shelf behind him. One of him and his wife on a beach. Another of two kids in school uniforms. He smiled. "I meant what I said. You are the backbone of this department right now." "Thank you," she answered, standing instead of sitting. "I want to move you onto the new client group. Bigger exposure, better path. I can make sure you are on the short list when senior roles open up." Her chest tightened. This was what everyone fought for. More responsibility, more pay, a future. "I appreciate that," she said. "But the gifts have people talking. It is making things hard for me out there." His smile dimmed. "People always talk. You cannot let jealousy control your life. You earned everything I have given you." "I am not comfortable with more gifts," she said. The words came out stiff, but they came out. "If I move to that client, I want it to be clear it is because of my work." He studied her face. The air in the room grew heavy. "Of course," he said at last. "Your work stands on its own. The gifts are a separate thing, a friend thing. You know that." She did not know that. Not in any way that felt safe. When she stepped out of his office, the floor seemed louder than before. Conversation buzzed. A few people looked away too fast. One phone pointed toward her for a second too long. She heard the soft click of a photo, barely there. She went back to her desk with the bracelet box in her bag, the promise of a new role in her ear, and a new question in her mind that gnawed at her as the office lights dimmed. Was this still only favoritism? Or had she just crossed into something that could ruin his marriage and swallow her whole with it? Chapter 2, Late Night Shift. The promotion talk spread faster than any official memo. By midweek, the story had turned into a dozen versions. In one, she had begged for the new role, trading loyalty for access. In another, he had handpicked her as his right hand. In a third, he had fought senior management to put her on the biggest account. No one knew the truth, but nobody needed it. The storyline with the gifts carried enough weight on its own. assignments started to tilt. Talia noticed first in small ways. Reports that usually went to others now landed in her inbox with a brief note from Marcus. Calendar invites appeared that left older staff off. When a client praised the latest presentation, Marcus called her name out in the group chat, then added a joke about the team needing to keep up with her. The message was clear. She was his favorite, whether she wanted that title or not. Some people drifted closer, trying to ride the current. They asked her to put in a good word. They complimented her work in sticky, obvious ways. Others pulled back. Break room conversations went quiet when she walked in. Invitations to lunch thinned. A few coworkers stopped replying to her friendly messages at all. The whisper network hardened into camps. "She knows exactly what she is doing," one woman said at the printer, thinking Talia was out of earshot. "Or maybe he knows exactly what he is doing," another answered. "You know how men like that move." Either way, someone is going to get burned. That same afternoon, an email popped up from Marcus. "Need your help on the Winston proposal. Time sensitive. Can you stay late tonight?" She stared at the screen. A tightness formed in her chest. The Winston account was big. It was the kind of client that changed careers. Saying no would mark her as difficult. Saying yes meant another night close to a line she did not trust. She typed back, "I can stay until 8. The reply came fast. "Perfect, we will order in." As the office emptied out that evening, the glow of the overhead lights felt harsh. The chatter faded. One by one, desks went dark. By 7, only a handful of people remained. The cleaning staff moved quietly between rows with carts and trash bags. Talia spread documents across the conference table. Marcus stood with his sleeves rolled up, jacket on the back of a chair, tie loosened. He walked her through charts and talking points, leaning over her shoulder to point at details on her laptop. Each time he leaned in, she held her breath. "You see this section," he said. "Your breakdown of the cost curve is the only clear thing in this whole deck. That is why I asked for you. No one else here is seeing the angles like you are." She nodded, eyes on the screen. "Thank you." "You do not have to be nervous," he said. "It is just us." "That is part of the problem," she answered before she could stop herself. He paused, then smiled like she had made a joke. "People talk, Talia. They always will. You cannot live your life trying to keep every rumor quiet." He walked to the sideboard and opened a small bag she had not noticed before. "I picked something up," he said. "Thought of you when I saw it." Her stomach dropped. "Mr. Reed, I told you I am not comfortable with more gifts." He held up a small velvet pouch. "It is not a big thing. Just a little good luck for the presentation. You are going to be front and center on this file. You should feel confident." He stepped closer and tipped the pouch into his palm. A pair of earrings slid out, catching the light. Simple, elegant, the same quiet luxury as the bracelet. She backed up a step. "I cannot accept that." His expression shifted, just enough for her to see the hurt pride behind it. "You think I am trying to buy you." "I think people already think that," she said. "And I have to work with them every day after you go home." He watched her in silence. The room felt too small. The hum of the building's air system filled the space between them. "You work harder than anyone here," he said. His voice was softer now. "I see it. I want you to feel like someone sees it. That is all." "Then put it in my review," she said. "Fight for my raise. Put my name on the work. But no more gifts. Not jewelry. Not perfume. Nothing you would not hand to everyone at the same time." He closed his hand around the earrings. The lines at the corners of his eyes deepened. "You are making this complicated," he said. "It is already complicated," she replied. Her pulse thudded in her ears. "I am trying to keep it from getting worse." For a moment, she thought he would argue. Instead, he slipped the earrings back into the pouch and put it in his jacket pocket. He forced a smile. "Fine," he said. "We will keep everything strictly professional." They went back to the slides. The work pulled them along, numbers and bullet points and charts filling the space that words about gifts had opened. Yet the air did not clear. It only grew tighter. Around 8, someone in the hallway slowed near the glass wall of the conference room. Talia felt the presence before she looked up. A coworker from the marketing side, phone in hand, walked past at a pace just slow enough to frame them both in one shot. Marcus at the head of the table. Talia leaning forward with her laptop. empty office behind them through the glass. The phone tilted, a faint click sounded. Then the coworker moved on. "You see that?" she asked quietly. Marcus shrugged. People like to feel important. A blurry picture of their boss working late is all they have. "In that picture, I am not just an employee," she said. "I am the woman everyone already thinks you are too close to." He did not respond. He just pushed another chart toward her. By the time they wrapped, the building was nearly empty. The cleaning staff had finished. The hall lights had dimmed to night mode. Talia packed her laptop and notes in silence. At the door, Marcus held it open. "You did good work tonight," he said. "We are going to make a strong impression with Winston. You stick with me on this. You will not regret it." She stopped just short of the threshold. "What does that mean?" "It means I look out for people who look out for me," he said. "That is how careers are built." "I am looking out for the work," she answered. "That is all." He smiled like he did not believe her. In the lobby, the security guard lifted a hand in a tired wave as she signed out. The glass doors reflected her face back at her. She barely recognized the woman in the reflection. Tired eyes, tight mouth, shoulders hunched as if bracing for impact. On the train home, her phone buzzed. It was a notification from a group chat that did not usually include her. Someone had added her number. The image that filled the screen showed the conference room from the hallway. Marcus at the head of the table, leaning in. Talia in profile, eyes on the laptop, the bracelet glinting at her wrist. The caption read, "Late night tutoring from the boss." Reactions filled the thread, laughing faces, fire icons. A comment, "Guess the bracelet worked." Her cheeks burned, even alone on the seat. She typed a message, deleted it, typed another, deleted again. There was no way to answer that would fix anything. Across the city, in a house she had never seen, his wife and children lived under his last name. She thought of the framed photos in his office, the ring on his hand, the gifts in her drawer. It was not just office gossip anymore. A picture existed now, sharp and shareable, tying her face to his in a way people already wanted to believe. A new question settled in her gut as the train rattled through the dark. What would happen when that image stopped being a joke in a private chat and became the evidence someone used to blow this open and destroy more than just rumors? Chapter 3, The Complaint. The fallout did not take long. By the end of the week, the image had traveled beyond the first chat. It showed up muted on screens across the floor. Some people hid it when she walked by. Others tilted their phones just enough for her to catch a glimpse. She felt like she was trailing smoke into every room she entered. Snatches of conversation followed her. "His hand is too close, look at that. She is loving it, look at her face. You cannot even see her expression. Does not matter, everyone knows what is going on." Her work did not change. She still hit her deadlines. Her reports stayed sharp. Yet everything around that work shifted. A few coworkers outright avoided her. Others treated her with forced politeness, like she carried something contagious. Dion rolled his chair over one morning, voice low. "Someone is going to drop that picture in the wrong inbox," he said. "If they have not already." "You think I do not know that," she said. Her eyes burned from lack of sleep. "I did nothing wrong, Dion." "I know," he said, "but the story is stronger than the facts right now." 2 days later, an email from HR landed in her inbox. "Please come to conference room B at 2:30 today for a meeting regarding a workplace concern." Her heart stumbled. She read it 3 times. There was no detail, no name of who else would be there, just her and the small, careful language of formal process. An hour after that, another message came through. This one from Marcus. "I have a meeting with HR this afternoon. Routine. Everything will be fine." The word routine sat in her mind like a lie. At 2:30, she walked into conference room B and found 2 HR staff waiting. A woman with a notebook open in front of her and a man with a laptop. The blinds were half closed. The table was bare. "Thank you for coming, Talia," the woman said. "Please have a seat." Talia sat, hands clasped in her lap to hide the tremor. "We want to start by saying, this is a confidential conversation," the woman continued. "We are looking into a concern that was brought to our attention. This is not an accusation against you. We just need your perspective." The man clicked on his laptop. "Have you received any personal gifts from your manager, Mr. Marcus Reed?" The question landed like a stone. There it was, plain. Yes, she said. There was no point in lying. He has given me several gifts over the last few months. What kind of gifts? The woman asked. Coffee cards, a scented candle, a book, perfume, a bracelet. She hesitated. There was an attempt to give me earrings this week. I refused them. Did he give similar gifts to other members of the team? The man asked. Not that I know of, she said. How did the gifts make you feel? The woman asked. The words caught in her throat. She thought about saying grateful or seen or valued something easy. Instead, the truth broke free. Uncomfortable, she said. At first, I tried to see them as normal appreciation, but as they kept coming and as people noticed, I felt exposed, targeted, like there was a story about me I could not control. Did you feel pressured to accept them? The man asked. Yes, she said. He gave some in front of others. I worried that refusing him publicly would hurt my position. When I did speak up in private and told him to stop, he acted like I was making things complicated. The woman wrote quickly. Has he ever suggested that these gifts were tied to your opportunities at the company? He has talked about looking out for people who look out for him, she said. About me not regretting sticking by him. He did not say it as a threat, but it felt like a condition. The man turned the laptop slightly, just enough for her to see the screen. The photo from the group chat filled it. Are you aware this picture has been circulating internally? He asked. Yes, she said. Her voice felt thin. It was taken without my knowledge while we were working late on a client presentation. Did you feel pressured to stay late with him that night? The woman asked. I agreed because the work is important and I did not want to be seen as difficult, she said. But I also knew how it would look. I tried to keep it professional. I told him again that I did not want any more gifts. The woman watched her face. Talia, do you feel safe working under Mr. Reed at this time? The answer formed fast and clear. No, she said, not anymore. Silence filled the room for a moment. The man closed the laptop. Thank you for being honest, he said. We take this very seriously. We are speaking with other staff as well. Your cooperation helps us understand the environment. Am I in trouble? She asked. The words came out before she could stop them. You are not under investigation, the woman said. This is about whether boundaries and company policy have been respected by management. We cannot share details about other interviews, but we can say that the anonymous complaint we received focused on his conduct, not yours. The phrase anonymous complaint echoed in her head. Someone had gone to HR. Someone had used the picture and the pattern and put it into official language. When they released her, she walked out on unsteady legs. The hallway felt too bright. At the far end, near the elevators, Marcus stood with his hands in his pockets. He looked up as she came out. Their eyes met for a second. Then he turned away and stepped back into another conference room where the door closed behind him. Word spread that HR was pulling people in one by one. Co-workers left the floor and returned with guarded faces. No one said much out loud, but the tension was thick enough to feel. The next morning, everything snapped. Around 11, a sharp voice rose from the reception area. A woman, loud and angry, several heads turned. Talia froze at her desk. You think I do not see what you are doing? The voice shouted. You think I am stupid? Footsteps approached. Then the boss's wife appeared at the edge of the open floor, flanked by a nervous receptionist trying and failing to calm her down. She held a printed copy of the late-night photo in one hand, crumpled at the edges from being gripped too hard. Her eyes were red. Her breath came in hard bursts. Where is she? The wife demanded. Where is the little favorite he keeps buying things for? The entire floor went silent. Talia, someone whispered. The wife's gaze swept the room and locked on her. You, she said, marching forward. You are the one. Talia stood heart pounding. Mrs. Reed, this is not the place for this. This is exactly the place, the woman said. She slapped the photo on the nearest desk. This is his place, his office, and there you are with him after hours wearing jewelry he paid for. You think I do not know what that means? Behind them, HR staff rushed in, the same woman and man from the meeting. Mrs. Reed, the HR lead said, we need to ask you to come with us. This is a private workplace. The hell it is private, she snapped. You have people here who cannot keep their hands off married men. Talia felt every word land like a blow. Faces watched from every angle. Some held pity, others hunger, others blank curiosity. She wanted to defend herself, to explain how the gifts had felt like traps, how the late nights had been about work and fear, not desire. The words clogged her throat. Marcus appeared from behind the HR staff, face strained. "Laura," he said, voice tight, "this is not the way to handle this." She rounded on him. "No, the way to handle marriage is to not build a little jewelry box at the office, Marcus." Security arrived and gently started guiding her toward a side room. Her anger cracked for a second and grief leaked through. "Those kids in the pictures on your desk," she said, her voice shaking now. "They are watching this too, whether you see it or not." The door closed behind them. The noise dropped again, but the damage hung in the air. HR turned to the floor. "We need everyone to return to their workstations," the HR man said. "We will be in touch if we need to speak with you further." Later that afternoon, a company-wide email went out. The wording was careful. "Effective immediately, Marcus Reed will be on administrative leave, pending the outcome of an internal investigation regarding adherence to our workplace conduct and ethics policies." No mention of gifts, no mention of images, no mention of her name. Still, eyes turned to her like she was the missing line in the message. By the end of the week, HR called her in again. This time, the tone was more formal. "We have concluded our initial review," the woman said. "We found that Mr. Reed's pattern of giving personal gifts to a single direct report, combined with the power imbalance and the perception it created, violated our conduct policy." Talia sat still, listening. "He has been offered the choice to resign," the man added. "If he declines, the company will move forward with termination procedures. Either way, he will not be returning to his role here." The words settled slowly. The boss who had stood over her shoulder, handed her gifts, promised her a future, would be gone. "And me," she asked, "what happens to me here?" "We recognize the strain this situation has placed on you and your reputation," the woman said. "We can offer a transfer to another department or support if you choose to seek employment elsewhere. The choice is yours." She walked home that day through streets washed in late light, thinking about choices. She could stay, take the transfer, try to rebuild her name in the same building where every glance reminded her of the bracelet and the picture and the wife's voice. Or she could walk away, start over somewhere no one knew her, as the woman who received the married boss's gifts. In her small apartment, she opened the drawer where she had hidden the perfume and the bracelet. She took them out, held them in her hands for a long time, then placed them in a plain box. The next morning, she arrived early. The office was quiet. She left the box at HR with a short note. "Returning all items given to me by Marcus Reed. These never represented my consent." At her desk, an email draft sat open to a recruiter she had spoken to months before, back when she had only dreamed of leaving. She finished the message, took a breath, and pressed send. The cost of his gifts had landed. His career lay on the edge of collapse. His marriage had been dragged into the light in front of strangers. Her own cost would unfold slower. Trust would need to be rebuilt somewhere new. Safety would mean more than a locked office door. As she shut down her computer and waited for the elevator, she felt one clear thing rise above the fear and regret. For the first time since the first coffee card slid across her desk, she had chosen her own path out of his shadow.